We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you. In this half hour of the show, we're going to be featuring a rebroadcast of Bruce Spirer from National Hazon, Inc. We're going to be talking about the Shemitah Project. Shemitah is be starting in 2 months, and they have a whole project, a contest, and you can get involved with it. So we figured last time we did it was like way back to the beginning of the year. People may have forgotten it. The contest is still going on. You can still enter. It's an art contest. In the second half of the show, we'll be discussing the portion of the week, which is the portion of Devarim, which is the beginning of the book of Deuteronomy. It's also this week is the Shabbos before the week before Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is next Sunday. We'll be talking about that as well. We've got wonderful a cappella music because we're still in that state of quasi-mourning due to the fact that we are commemorating the destruction of the temple. We've got a great Hasidic story all the way at the end. And before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Israeli warplanes blew up a Hamas weapons factory and a rocket site in response to dozens of balloon firebombs into Israel. Arabs from a nearby village rioted in the village of Esh Kodesh. One rioter was killed as he threw a pipe bomb. For the first time ever, the UN passed a resolution saying that Hamas's use of civilians as human shields is not to be tolerated. Yay, they finally got it right. Israel sent two firefighting planes and flame-retardant chemicals to Cyprus to help put out what is called the worst forest fire in the history of Cyprus. Israel also sent ventilators, oxygen tanks, and advanced protective gear to Kathmandu, Nepal, to help with their COVID relief. And reports of acts of anti-Semitism this week, a Jewish man was threatened with great bodily harm on a London bus, and swastikas were spray-painted on gravestones in Baltimore. Legislation approved on Tuesday by the Arizona Senate requires local schools to teach that any claim about Israel not having the right to exist is anti-Semitic. And finally, looking to live in paradise, the city of Torah, Ciudad Torah, 75 miles south of Mexico City, is in the first village in Latin America for mostly Orthodox Jews. The village, now under construction, will begin with 40 houses and hopes to attract 120 families by 2024. Houses start at as little as $129,000. And that's the news. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We're on the line with Mr. Bruce Spear from Hazon, national organization. We're not just talking local, we're talking national Hazon. We've had many representatives from Hazon on the program over the years and feature some of the wonderful things that they've done. They've come up with a really interesting program. I don't think anybody else has ever thought about doing this, and we'll let Bruce speak about it. We're going to talk about the sabbatical year of all things. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Rabbi. It's a pleasure to be here, and thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure indeed. Okay, so for the uninitiated, tell us what the Shemitah or sabbatical year is.
So the Shemitah year is it's a moment in Jewish time that's a parallel to Shabbat for years, right? So once a week we have Shabbat, we take a rest. And then similarly, every 7 years, we're asked to take a bigger rest as a society. And that occurs a few places in the Torah. And it's something that happens in a cycle every 7 years. And we get to step back and look at how we relate to our land, how we're relating to each other. And it's something that we talk about a lot in Israel. But we often don't have a conversation about it outside of Israel. And at Chazon, we really think that this is a real fertile area for us to think about how to respond to the climate crisis.
It's true. Usually when we're talking sabbatical year outside of Israel, the only thing we're talking about is that there won't be any Carmel wine vintage 2022. And you have to worry, when you buy your esrog, you're actually buying your lulav, and they give you the esrog for free. And but in Israel, it is a big deal. I have relatives in Israel, and for them, it's like, it is a big deal. So what is the big deal? It doesn't really affect outside of Israel. It's the idea of allowing the land to lie fallow, which means they don't cultivate, do any kind of commercial cultivation of farming. So, but what are the ramifications in Israel? And then how are we going to, it's two questions, we'll break it up. And how do we do with that outside of Israel then, Bruce?
Yeah, so for the Shemitah project, the broader a conversation that we're organizing, we want to really focus on what are the underlying values of the Shemitah year. So in Israel, we can't sow seed, we can't harvest crops, we need to allow others to enter our vineyards and our agricultural land to harvest whatever is growing. And then also we need to forgive any debts that may be outstanding coming into that year. So outside of Israel, there's nothing by Jewish law that commands us per se, but there's some really important, compelling values that really underlie this whole conversation. At every 7 years, we're asked to step back and look at how we're relating to our land, how are we using resources, who are we giving these resources to, who are we providing or denying opportunities based on what money or other debts they owe to us in society. So outside of Israel, it gives us a place to step back and take a breath. And with all these overwhelming challenges that are growing with the climate crisis, we get to look back and say, in the last 7 years, what have I done? How has my relationship, my resources, and others worked? What do we want to do in the next coming 7 years? So it's a way that we can mark time beyond just the week, but into a broader scale for 7 years. So as individuals, as institutions, as a society, we could really start thinking about the bigger picture of the world that we want to build.
Okay, that's pretty impressive. One of the major focuses of the sabbatical, in addition to the fact that we're going to allow the land to rest and the minerals will rejuvenate during that time as all the weeds will grow and then all that stuff will get put back into the earth, is to give the farmers a sabbatical. Now, people know about, professors take sabbatical, and I really wish I could take a sabbatical and go take off and not work for a year and engage in some sort of an academic study. But the idea is that very much we don't want our farmers to turn into, the way they say farmer in Yiddish is a Feldman. Okay, we don't want them to be field people. We don't want to have them have their heads in the dirt. We want to have them, they should, we're Jews, they should be involved in their, at least 7 years, take a time off and go study Torah and reacclimate oneself with Judaism that way, rather than just the dirt that's under one's fingernails. If you could comment on that, please, Bruce Spearer.
Yeah, I think that really gets to the core of the conversation that we want to have, is it brings up, what does it mean to really enjoy rest? What are the conditions that we need to create in order to enjoy rest? So in the example you were giving about the farmers, I think that's also something that in our modern world, a lot of us are not working on the land, right? A lot of us, you know, there's only a small percentage of us, but we're getting our daily bread from a different source. So what are the boundaries, the guidelines, the social supports we need so we could take that sabbatical every 7 years? So even if I am a rabbi in Ferndale, you know, what do I have to do to create space for me to take that sabbatical? So we could do things like engage in spirituality or spend more time with our family or really work on the issues that maybe I'm focused so much on the daily work that I can't step back and think about the big picture of my life and my community's life, my society's life.
Okay, what's the impetus? Hazon is, when I think Hazon, I think of initiatives like farm to table and food justice and environmentalism. Where's the push? Where's the emphasis from coming from in Hazon? What's the rationale behind pushing the concepts for Shemitah, Bruce Spear?
So we think that in general, right, we're in the middle of a climate crisis. People feel overwhelmed, and we ask, what can we do to make a difference? And we really believe that the Jewish tradition compels us to respond. And not only that, but there's a lot of different elements of the Jewish tradition that can provide us with different ways to move forward and feel empowered. And one aspect of that is the Jewish calendar. And the Jewish calendar is a very powerful ritual for us that we're all very aware of, but it has some underlying values that Hazon, we feel like we could lift up. And Shemitah specifically brings up a lot of questions about our relationship with the land, with
recording the radio show. I'll call you back in an hour.
And a lot of those questions are unresolved. So it's not saying, here's Shemitah, here's the plan for the perfect sustainable world. It's saying, hey, you know what? I want you to not grow food for the year. And then it raises the question, well, then what am I supposed to eat? And then, you know, how do we then go ahead and compensate other people that normally would be doing that work? And it raises a lot of deep questions and allows us to examine the real foundations of our society. And so one of the reasons why we picked up Shemitah is because it's an area that has a lot of potential to be thought about and is not often discussed historically. But it brings up so many important questions about the intersection of our relationship with the land, our relationship with each other. And again, it really expands that horizon from just weekly, monthly to a cycle of every 7 years. So we really get to step back and think in a bigger way, bound within the Jewish tradition.
Okay, so the reason why we're bringing this up is because Hazon is starting an initiative, which is actually very exciting. When I got the letter and I forwarded it to my kids, who are like all into the program, they were like jumping up and down going, oh, the Shemitah Prize. So it's 6 months. Like I said in my introduction, we should be really talking about Passover because that's coming up like right next to you. If you ask any rabbi, what's the most important holiday in the calendar? They will say the next one. And so everybody's thinking Passover, and I tell people you got to sell your hummus, you know, shmurimatz, this type of stuff. So now all of a sudden we're focusing now, and you're bringing it up. It's 6 months until the holiday. What are we going to do for 6 months that we're initiating this project now, Bruce Spear?
So that's really great, and I think it really emphasizes that talking about Shemitah forces us to expand our time horizons. You know, preparing for a year-long Shabbat-like event requires some planning. It requires me to think about it, you know, maybe 6 months now, but maybe the next year we'll start thinking 2 years out, 3 years out, maybe the full six-year cycle. But now we've launched the Shemitah Prizes, and it's a competition that's opened up to anyone. You don't have to be an artist. You don't have to be of a certain age. You don't have to be Jewish. We want to really make this an expansive conversation. And we feel that just about every area of Jewish life has some kind of ritual or marker to it, right? Pesach has matzah and seders. Even Shavuos, you know, is marked by eating dairy or staying all night studying. But the one area that does not have an explicit ritual associated with it is Shemitah. And if we're going to elevate the conversation about Shemitah and really bring it into the Jewish consciousness, into a broader consciousness, we need to engage at the level of ritual, at the level of art, and bringing a relationship out to the broader community. So we have five different categories, and people, the first one is for a ritual object, right? How are we going to mark the Shemitah year? So for example, if it's going to be a Seder plate, what would that plate look like? When do we use it? Are we just going to have it out during the Shemitah year? Or is it going to be out on Shabbos during the 6 years leading up to it? And you know, what are the ways that that can help us relate to the concepts and the ideas that Shemitah is really asking us about? And then we also have fine art. What are some sculptures or pictures or photographs that really embodies these ideas of Shemitah and marks it and allows us to be inspired by it? We also have film and videos. And the last Shemitah year, a lot of our partners put out some really beautiful video work that, again, gets people to think about what is the broader scale? What are the bigger values that Shemitah is asking us? And then the last two are is about performance art, liturgy, poetry, song, the rituals itself. What are the rituals that would mark and define Shemitah different from other times of our years? And the last is a category for essays and ideas. People that may not think of themselves as artists, but really have some ideas and thoughts they want to contribute, we have a special category for them. And submissions will be open until May 19th, just after Shavuot. And we'll be offering a prize awarded by independent judges, a grand prize for each of the five categories, as well as three additional awards.
Okay, so let me just see if we got this clear. So what this Shemitah project is, you're looking for people to express themselves creatively using their creative talents and to put it in some sort of a media, whether that be in an artistic manner, photography, video, creative writing, come up with some sort of a liturgical thing. Do I have that correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so now, are there, when you talk about the every person, there's five different categories. There's a monetary prize over here. We're not talking about just a certificate suitable for framing over here.
Yes, there's a monetary prize.
Are we allowed to say what that monetary
prize is? Absolutely, yeah. It's the winner in each category will be awarded $1,800.
That's a sizable chunk of change.
And then three additional awards will be in each category, $250.
Okay, now, let's say the competition will be open to like everybody, but let's say you have somebody who's like Rembrandt is going to now paint this Shemitah picture. And like, if I got myself a Rembrandt Shemitah picture, I was just like, wow, how is the playing field going to be leveled among people? So like, if you're going to say, Rabbi Finman, I want you to paint a picture. Now, if I'm going to paint a picture, I think my kindergarten and granddaughter could do a better picture than I can. I just do not have artistic talent. But are we going to level a field? Or are we actually looking for like Rembrandts to emerge and come up, and then everybody else should just be discouraged and say, I'm not a Rembrandt?
Yeah, so what I want to say is like, yes, this is a competition. People will be awarded prizes. There'll be winners. But the goal here is for us to share just about all the entries. We have a portal on our website, shemitahproject.org, but we'll actually be featuring all the entries. So on the one hand, yes, we'll be selecting a winner of a prize, which may or may not be a professional artist, right? Because we want to, our judge will be basing on the quality of the submission and the artistry of it, but also, you know, in what ways does it really speak to the messages and the values, and it creates a conversation amongst the Jewish people. So that's one set, but also the real prize of this entire competition is that we're gonna have lots of people thinking about Shemitah, and people will be able to showcase their work to anyone, because it's gonna be a public forum where people actually see what's being presented. So we really encourage everyone to participate, whether or not you think about yourself as an artist, because everyone's ideas, thoughts, and visions is really going to add to the conversation and really bring up something new in how we relate to this tradition and how we can move forward as a community and relate to it.
Okay. Is there a junior division, or is it everybody gets thrown in the same pot?
So the prizes are only divided by the categories. So everyone will be judged within one category.
Okay, fair enough. Now, so this project is starting now. Is the I'm or like if I did something right now, is there where for me to submit it? And we'll talk about how to do that. So I could do something today, and I have until the middle of May. What's going to prevent this whole project from suffering from burnout between now and September 6th, which is when Rosh Hashanah is?
So you mentioned the Shemitah Project. So the Shemitah Project is actually a larger program that was launched in 2007, the two Shemitah cycles ago. And that project is really a partnership between many different organizations that want to talk about, teach about, and cultivate learning, understanding, engagement with the Shemitah tradition. The Shemitah Prizes are just one aspect of that. So the Shemitah Project, over the next 6 months into the Shemitah year, you could go to our website and you could see all the different educational offerings and different programming being offered around the world. I mean, working with people both in North America, but as well as people in Israel and different parts of the globe, because this is really an international conversation. So we have we have 20 partners and growing that are excited and bringing up new conversations and topics about Shemitah. So this is not just one small conversation, but we're really seeing it grow and generating excitement across the community.
Okay, now you had mentioned before that the category number one was to create a ritual symbol. Like we have matzah on Pesach or Seder plate, and we have lulav and esrog for Sukkos. What's going to happen with, or what would you hope would happen with this, the winner's entry to this ritual thing? Because creating ritual in Judaism is really hard to like institute something new.
So there's a, I'll offer two examples that we talk about sometimes in our programming. So one is, Kabbalat Shabbat is something that was really, within the scope of, the 2 to 3,000 years of our tradition is actually fairly young, right? And at some point it was a new idea that was instituted, and now it's integrated as a part of our service that just feels like it's been there forever, right? But we're only looking back to the
Kabbalah. 500 years, Shabbat, yeah.
Right. But then similarly, the Tu B'Shvat Seder, also a similar idea that has had an evolution over time, right? It was instituted around the same time as Kabbalat Shabbat, but now we're seeing it picked up more and more in the last century or so. So ritual does have a history of being adopted and brought in over time. It's just a matter of people of the community having a really compelling reason, a spiritual reason that they want to bring out these aspects of our tradition, and we start practicing it. So, over time, as we generate this conversation, we hope to see these rituals and these ideas adopted by our community. And it's really projects like the Shemitah Prizes that are gonna start making this conversation bigger and more community-wide and making the climate crisis and our relationship with the environment a major feature of the Jewish world. One of our goals is that by 2029 that we see the majority of Jewish institutions have made work on the environment, sustainability, and climate change a central piece of their work. So in Chazon, we're really committed to these ideas and rituals becoming a major part of the Jewish life.
Okay, that is fascinating. I like that. That's a great idea. Last question, because we are running out of time for this section. It's now Rosh Hashanah 2022, and the sabbatical year is over, and Hazon is making an account, the Cheshbon HaNefesh, as it's called, looking back. What would be how would you define success in this project, the Shemitah Project, Mark, Bruce?
So the Shemitah Project, I would say it's really seeing new programming, exciting ideas, and new engagement in the idea of Shemitah, right? Seeing local shuls and congregations talking about it, right? Asking for resources or creating their own resources. One of the really exciting things about the last Shemitah year is we created the Shemitah source book that brought together a lot of the traditional sources as well as modern resources. And one of the really exciting things is that we saw in the last 7 years, more and more other projects inspired by these ideas making their own spin on Shemitah and bring it to their communities. I recently met with a rabbi in Canada, and they've been spending the last year and a half studying Shemitah. So just seeing more and more people engaging with the idea of Shemitah anew and using these values to engage in the very real challenges of the climate crisis. And using Shemitah as a way to let go of maybe the guilt or the inaction that we feel around it, and just, you know, assessing that, letting that go as a community, and saying, how can we use the ideas to just take one step forward, and seeing more and more people engaging with action on the climate crisis through the Shemitah lens in the Jewish tradition.
Okay, that's terrific. Okay, so now if people want to get involved, they want to find out more, how do they go about doing that, Bruce Spearer?
Sure, you could go to www.shemitahproject.org. That's spelled S-H-M-I-T-A-P-R-O-J-E-C-T.org. And you'll see on that page a link to the Shemitah Prizes, and all the information you need for the Shemitah Prize can be found there, as well as lots of resources and events about Shemitah learning in general.
Okay. Our guest today has been Bruce Spearer from Hazon, the national organization of Hazon. They do all kinds of wonderful good things. We've had them on the show before. We want you to keep us apprised and let us know how this is going. Maybe some kind of announcement after May as who got what, and hopefully one of the kids will put a plug in. One of them will be a Finman. So they're probably of the nine Finmans who are capable, I think maybe you'll probably get like six entries. So they're into it. And keep us apprised. Continue success.
Very exciting, and I'm excited to see the Finman submissions to the Shemitah Prizes.
Okay, we'll do that. Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We got some wonderful a cappella music coming up for you. This is Benny Fried doing an a cappella version of his famous song, Tati, that means Daddy, My King, referring to the Almighty.
I was told to speak to you, Hashem. Maybe you can tell me who I am. I've been lost too long to know where I belong. In the end, my only hope is that you'll hold my hand. How am I supposed to see your path? With so many questions I have to ask. Now I'm standing here alone, I'm losing hope. And in the end, my tears are falling to you, I shed.
I am here to speak with you, Hashem.
Starting to see. I've been lost before, I know, but here I stand, holding your hand, taking a part in your plan.
And that was Benny Friedman, Tati My King. Up next, sort of new on the scene, this is Yonatan Stern from Israel. The song is called the Yishtabak, which means let's praise the Almighty.
הקל הגדול הגיבור והנורא בשמיים ובארץ 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 ובארץ השתבח שמך
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Hey, Schultz, I'm here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We got time for one more. This is Joey Newcomb. He's been around the block a couple times. This is Thank You, Hashem, the a cappella version. There's an opiate epidemic, but Advanced Rapid Detox has a solution for people addicted to pain pills, heroin, and dependent on Suboxone and Methadone. Advanced Rapid Detox performs detox under sedation in the hospital. Patients sleep through withdrawals and wake up without cravings. Dr. Julia Aronoff and the staff at Advanced Rapid Detox help people restore their lives and the lives of their families. Addiction affects everyone, even in the Jewish community, and Advanced Rapid Detox is there to help. Call 800-603-1813, that's 800-603-1813, or visit them online at www.advancedrapiddetox.com. Herschel Finman here, listening to the Jewish Hour. This week in the synagogue, we will be reading the portion of Devarim. It can be found at the very beginning of the book of Deuteronomy. The first words of the portion start with Elu hadvarim asher diber Moshe. These are the words that Moses spoke. The word Elu, these, it's maybe not significant because after all the portion is called Devarim, which we know that the reason why each portion is called by the name that it is called is due to the first significant word in the portion. And the word Elu, I guess, is not significant enough. No one ever calls the portion Elu HaDvarim. It's Elu HaDvarim. It's not called that. It's called Dvarim. So when it says these, though, it says Moshe's, the whole point of the book of Deuteronomy, as the name indicates, is Greek for review. It's a review of, there's probably close to 500 of the 613 commandments in there. There's an overview starting with the Exodus of Egypt and going all the way through for the 40 years in the desert. But it's not just so you didn't forget something. Why is it that the book of Deuteronomy is necessary? This is an interesting thing, if we can answer that question by answering a different question. Why do we sleep? Why do we need to sleep? Obviously, because we're tired. And then we go to sleep. And when you wake up, it's like brand new. It's like, wow, I have a new beginning. And indeed, every single day you go to sleep and you wake up and it's like, this is new. And the Jew's first words out of his mouth while he's still in bed and probably, and should be even before he rubs the sleep out of his eyes, is, thank you, God, for waking me up and trusting me that I'll get through the day. So it is something new. And therefore, even though the book of Deuteronomy has not changed in more than 3,300 years, when we read, when we learn something, especially for those people who have a custom, and I suggest that if you don't have the custom, you should get the custom, of reviewing the Bible regularly, especially the first five books. And if you're Jewish, then there is this idea of each week, and I talk about the portion of the week. So, for example, on this week, when we're reading the book of the portion of Devarim, so on Sunday, you'll read the first section. There are seven sections in each parsha. And each day, you'll read one section. And if you can handle it with Rashi's commentary, even better. Rashi tells you what the words mean, because a lot of the times, there's one instance where, not more, there's many instances where you think, well, this verse must mean something. And Rashi says, no, don't think it means that. It means this. And it's all based on the oral tradition, which you cannot learn the written, you cannot learn the Bible without the oral tradition. That is a mistake that people make. You have to have the commentary provided by Moses when he came down the mountain, because he did spend time on the mountain talking to God, and God told him, well, this is what this means, and this is what that means, and Moses spent 40 years in the desert reviewing it with him, and then coming up with this massive review of the last month of his life. So when we look at it, it's not just a repetition, it's a new thing. It should be a new thing. Now, the portion of Deuteronomy is always read, the portion of Devarim, the beginning of the book of Deuteronomy, is always read prior to Tisha B'Av, the day in which the fast is commemorated. We fast that day to commemorate the destruction of the temple and other things also. Was the day that the spies came back. We'll talk about it next week when we get closer to Tisha B'Av. This week, for those people who are adhering to the commemoration, so in addition to what we've been doing till now, which includes not listening to live music and not eating a fruit that you haven't eaten before, not buying new clothes, not getting married, not decorating one's house, meaning like interior decorating type stuff, and it's all pushed off. So in this week, leading up to Tisha B'Av, so we refrain from eating meat and drinking wine and doing laundry. So make sure you get all your laundry done before. I was wondering why. My wife came up to me yesterday and said, all your laundry's clean. And I went, thank you very much. And it just now occurred to me why she told me that all my laundry is clean. It's because she's not doing laundry till after Tisha B'Av. That's 10 days. Baruch Hashem, I have enough laundry to get me through 10 days. This isn't Europe where we had to, you know, in the shtetl where we had one pair of socks. Nope. Baruch Hashem. The portion, let's go back to the portion, which we're talking about. The portion has many, many connections. There it talks about, Moshe mentions, the spies, which was one of the reasons why there's the, Tisha B'Av was the real day. It was why that day was picked is because the spies came back and gave a bad report. And the people complained, and God said, okay, you guys are all going to die in the desert. And that's one thing. And then there's also the idea of Echa, which the Book of Lamentations, Echa, is translated in colloquially as the Book of Lamentations. It's written by Jeremiah. Moshe also asks Echa. Echa means, how could it be? So, The connection is there because we did Tisha B'Av last year. We said the Book of Lamentations last year. And you know what? The temple hasn't been built yet. It's not that we need to sit and cry over the lack of a temple. That's what people used to do 100 years ago, 200 years ago, maybe 1,000 years ago, and they felt the loss. I mean, we're told, you know, you have the famous verse in Psalms in chapter 134, I think it is, that if I forget thee, Jerusalem, at my right hand wither, let my tongue stick in my cheek, etc., etc. And we do things to commemorate, like at weddings we break a glass so that people should say, oh, no, this glass is broken, and remind us that the temple's in the state of desolation, and we can't get too happy about something, even though it's a real great joy when people get married. But sitting and crying is not going to build the temple. We've talked about this before. It says what's going to build the temple is doing acts of kindness to other people, simply because acts of kindness need to get done. Lubavitcher Rebbe said in 1988, all we really need is one person to do one act to tip the scales, and Mashiach will come. And then the Rambam, the Maimonides, promises that as bleak and black as Tisha B'Av is now, that's how great a holiday it will be. It will be the greatest Jewish holiday on the calendar. And I would love to wish everybody a happy Tisha B'Av. But in the meantime, I have to wish you, wait a second, because we have to take a commercial break, and we will be right back with the Hasidic story. Don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard. The Specs Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Would you like to get in touch with me? Go to my website, rabbifinman.com. We've been making the same announcement at the end of the show for 26 years. You know about rabbifinman.com. Rabbifinman.com was up before the show was. And it's had some regenerations and some rebirths and come up with a new or improved look. But you know what's there. You want to contact me. You have archived editions of the show. We have various other media in which we present Judaism. And there's also the donations page. We are in July. June was paid. Thank you very much. You came through. We need you to step up and come through. Doesn't matter how much the donation is. And let's say you can only afford $5. If you can afford $100,000, please. We'll take $100,000. If you can only afford $5, okay, send $5. You can make it a monthly thing. You can do that by if you have a PayPal account, And that way you set it up through PayPal and it happens automatically. Make it a regular thing. We have many, many people who do that. And it's a wonderful thing. And we'll thank you in advance. So to do that, go to RabbiFinman.com, go to donations, send your pledge today. If you're listening this far, we're into the show over 50 minutes, and you've been listening till now, you've enjoyed it. So we'd like to continue. 26 years is a good chunk of change that we've been on air. If you have some kind of access to SoundCloud, you could probably go all the way back to, say, 2004. I don't have access to, I don't even know how to do that, but they're out there someplace because I know nothing ever leaves the internet. And somewhere are all my shows going all the way back from 2004. But on the website, it's rabbifinman.com. You can listen to at least 3-4 years. And that's quite a chunk of change too. So do it today. Don't like internet giving credit cards over the waves. Not understood. Send your donation to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48237. Story involves a certain person, a merchant, whose name was undisclosed in the story. He was known as the merchant, a Jewish merchant. A Jewish merchant who, for all intents and purposes, he ran what was referred to as an inn, but was really nothing more than a bar. And he had a regular clientele of Russian peasants who would come to him and they would buy his vodka. And, you know, that's how he made his living, as he paid his bills. Just so happened that somebody saw what a good business this merchant had and decided that he is going to open up a similar establishment right across the street and sell vodka for cheaper. So he saw all of his business. You know, people are, you know, if I have to pay two pennies over here for a shot, if I have to pay one penny over here for a shot, I'm going to pay one penny. So his livelihood is going right down the tubes. He went to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, who gave him a lesson in, I guess you would call it macroeconomics. And he said, Rebbe, what should I do? Should I move? If I sell it cheaper than him, it'll cause a price war and we'll both lose money. I mean, I have family. I've been doing this for years. My livelihood. Rebbe Schaub said, listen to this. This is what you're going to do. You're going to raise the price of your vodka. And you'll put out a sign that says something to the effect in Russian of artisanal. This is a really special high-class vodka. This is not the stuff. This is not the rotka that the guy across the street is selling. This is vodka. Okay? And so he said, Rebbe is going to, he said, trust me. So he put out a sign. The vodka now costs 3 cents a glass, 3 cents a shot, but it's special. It's artisanal. And lo and behold, his business boomed. And the other guy went out of business. That's going to do it for today. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. And we're glad to supply a little supply-side economics course here on everything else. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. And we hope you, as the expression goes, Mishanichnis Av Mamaitin Besimcha, when Av enters, we decrease in joy. As Lubavitcher Rebbe said, when Av enters, you decrease it, Av, with joy. Have a joyous week. Take care.